Well, good morning, everybody. It's January 17th, 2012, and it's Tuesday. Terrific Tuesday. And I'm not supposed to be reading this morning. My co-anchor is, so I wasn't prepared as I should be. But we'll continue on the chapter in Think and Grow Rich. Yesterday, we read about people making opinions into our business decisions and sometimes creating us to get depressed and procrastinate. And so we're going to continue in chapter 8 today and start off where we left off yesterday. Yesterday, my final words were, "Tell the world what you intend to do, but first show it." And so now what we're going to talk about is freedom or death on a decision. And I just wanted to say, we were talking last week about a lot of the negative things that are going on in the world. And I had the pleasure to talk to, because I'm very involved in meteorology, and I'm pretty close to a lot of guys that work at the Weather Channel. And I was talking yesterday to Jim Cantore at the Weather Channel, and he and I went to the same alma mater, college, and we got into conversations about Tuscaloosa and all the work that's being done there. And I had no idea of the tremendous successes that they were having there, but that home building show from ABC has been there. They've been building literally whole blocks at a time. Volunteers building 8, 9, 10 houses at a time, and other groups, all these different charitable groups and organizations from donations coming in all over the country, building these houses. And I swear to God, watching that stuff and seeing what these people have been through with a category, not a category, that's hurricane, with an E5 going through their neighborhood, literally tearing the neighborhood apart, killing 169 people, and just decimating the land, so much so that the winds were so fast that trees were literally debarked and smooth to the touch, like sandpaper gone over each limb. Just amazing wind speeds there. And so obviously something like that is going to wipe out the homes. And to see all these people come together and hear about, what Jim was telling me about all the good going on there and the rebuilding effort and so on. They're literally building a whole block at a time of subdivisions and homes and so on. And really incredible work, and it's just so uplifting and literally brought tears to my eyes of joy. Just some of the things that Jim was telling me, and the Weather Channel's going to do a special on it soon, and it's just it's phenomenal. So when we come together as a group, when we get inspired as a group, as a team, together everyone achieves more. That's when great things happen. That's when really fantastic things happen. And I just had to tell you guys about that because, yes, we deal with a lot of negatives all the time. The news, we're saturated with newspapers and radio, and in order for them to sell commercials, they give us bad news. And so that kind of programming getting into our heads is bad for us. And that's why Think and Grow Rich in this call is so important, because every morning we get the opportunity to hear from great people like Paul Hutchings and other great people on this call that give their feelings and their thoughts. Melvin many times, and Denise and Bill and Marcia and Linda and Philip and Bill up in Virginia, and another guy up in Rochester, and Cynthia in New York, and so, and Bernie in Montana. So we get great people giving in great advice at the end of the call. And so we're together here. Together, everyone achieves more. Okay. Freedom or death on a decision. That's where we're going to start today. The value of decisions depends upon the courage required to render them. The great decisions, which served as the foundation of civilization, were reached by assuming great risks, which often meant the possibility of death. Lincoln's decision to issue his famous Proclamation of Emancipation, which gave freedom to the colored people of America, was rendered with full understanding that his act would turn thousands of friends and political supporters against him. He knew, too, that the carrying out of that proclamation would mean death to thousands of men on the battlefield. In the end, it cost Lincoln his life. That required courage. Socrates' decision to drink the cup of poison rather than compromise in his personal belief was a decision of courage. It turned time ahead 1,000 years and gave to people then unborn the right to freedom of thought, of speech. The decision of General Robert E. Lee when he came to the parting of the way with the Union and took up the cause of the South was a decision of courage, for he well knew that it might cost him his own life, that it would surely cost the lives of others. But the greatest decision of all time, as far as any American citizen is concerned, was reached in Philadelphia July 4, 1776, when 56 men signed their names to a document which they well know would bring freedom to all Americans, or leave every one of the 56 hanging from the gallows. You have heard of this famous document, but you may not have drawn from it the great lesson in personal achievement it so plainly taught. We all remember the date of this momentous decision, but few of us realize the courage that decision required. We remember our history as it was taught. We remember dates and the names of the men who fought. We remember Valley Forge and Yorktown. We remember George Washington and Lord Cornwallis. But we know little of the real forces back of these names, dates, and places. We know still less of that intangible power which ensured us freedom long before Washington's armies reached Yorktown. We read the history of the Revolution and imagine that George Washington was the father of our country, that it was he who won our freedom, while the truth is Washington was only an accessory after the fact, because victory for his armies had been ensured long before Cornwallis surrendered. This is not intended to rob Washington of any of the glory he so richly merited. Its purpose, rather, is to give greater attention to the astounding power that was the real cause of his victory. It is nothing short of tragedy that the writers of history have missed entirely, even the slightest reference to the irresistible power which gave birth and freedom to the nation destined to set up new standards of independence for all the peoples of the earth. I say it is a tragedy because it is the same self-power which must be used by every individual who surmounts the difficulties of life and forces life to pay the price asked. Let us briefly review the events which gave birth to this power. The story, I'm getting some feedback on the line, and I did mute the line, but if you could, please mute your lines. I appreciate it. Let us briefly review the events which gave birth to this power. The story begins with an incident in Boston, March 5th, 1770. British soldiers were patrolling the streets by their presence, openly threatening citizens. The colonists resented armed men marching in their midst. They began to express their resentment openly, hurling stones as well as epithets at the marching soldiers until the commanding officer gave orders, "Fix bayonets, charge." The battle was on. It resulted in the death and injury of many. The incident aroused such resentment that the Provincial Assembly, made up of prominent colonists, called a meeting for the purpose of taking definite action. Two of the members of that assembly were John Hancock and Samuel Adams. Long live their names. They spoke up courageously and declared that a move must be made to eject all British soldiers from Boston. Remember this, a decision in the minds of two men might properly be called the beginning of the freedom which we of the United States now enjoy. Remember, too, that the decision of these two men called for faith and courage because it was dangerous. Remember, we were just talking about decisions. Before the assembly adjourned, Samuel Adams was appointed to call the governor of the province, Hutchinson, and demand the withdrawal of the British troops. The request was granted. The troops were removed from Boston, but the incident was not closed. It had caused a situation destined to change the entire trend of civilization. Strange, is it not, how the great changes such as the American Revolution and the World War often have their beginnings in circumstances which seem unimportant. It is interesting, also, to observe that these important changes usually begin in the form of a definite decision in the minds of a relatively small number of people. Few of us know the history of our country well enough to realize that John Hancock, Samuel Adams, and Richard Henry Lee of the province of Virginia were the real fathers of our country. Richard Henry Lee became an important factor in the story by reason of the fact that he and Adams communicated frequently by correspondence, sharing freely their fears, their hopes concerning the welfare of the people of their provinces. From this practice, Adams conceived the idea that a mutual exchange of letters between the 13 colonies might help to bring about the coordination of effort so badly needed in connection with the solution of their problems. 2 years after the clash with the soldiers in Boston, March of 1772, Adams presented this idea to the assembly in the form of a motion that a correspondence committee be established among the colonies, which definitely appointed correspondents in each colony. For the purpose of friendly cooperation for the betterment of the colonies of British America. Mark well this incident. It was the beginning of the organization of the far-flung power destined to give freedom to you and to me. The mastermind had already been organized. It consisted of Adams, Lee, and Hancock. I tell you further that if two of you agree upon the earth concerning anything for which you ask, it will come to you from my Father who is in heaven. The Committee of Correspondence was organized. Observe that this move provided the way for increasing the power of the mastermind by adding it to men from all colonies. Take notice that this procedure constituted the first organized planning of the disgruntled colonists. In union, there is strength. Just like in team, together everyone achieves more. In union, there is strength. The citizens of the colonies had been waging disorganized warfare against the British soldiers through incidents similar to the Boston riot, but nothing of benefit had been accomplished. Their individual grievances had not been consolidated under the one mastermind. No group of individuals had put their hearts, minds, souls, and bodies together in one definite decision to settle their difficulty with the British once and for all, until Adams, Hancock, and Lee got together, created a mastermind group. Meanwhile, the British were not idle. They, too, were doing some planning and masterminding on their own account, with the advantage of having back of them, having money back them up, and an organized soldiery. The Crown appointed Gage to supplant Hutchinson as the governor of Massachusetts. One of the new governor's first acts was to send a messenger to call on Adams for the purpose of endeavoring to stop his opposition by fear, something we all know and hate. We can best understand the spirit of what happened by quoting the conversation between Fenton, the messenger, and Adams. Colonel Fenton, I've been authorized, this is a quote, I've been authorized by Governor Gage to assure you, Mr. Adams, that the governor has been empowered to confer upon you such benefits as would be satisfactory. Endeavor to win Adams by promise of bribes, upon the condition that you engage to cease in your opposition to the measures of the government. It is the governor's advice to you, sir, not to incur the further displeasure of his majesty. Your conduct has been such as makes you liable to penalties of amount of Henry VIII, by which persons can be sent to England for trial for treason, or prison, or misprison of treason, at the discretion of a governor of a province. But by changing your political course, you will not only receive great personal advantages, but you will make your peace with the king. Adams had the choice of two decisions. He could cease his opposition and receive personal bribes, or he could continue and run the risk of being hanged. Clearly, the time had come when Adams was forced to reach instantly a decision which could have cost his life. The majority of men would have found it difficult to reach such a decision. The majority would have sent back an evasive reply, but not Adams. He insisted upon Colonel Fenton's word of honor that the colonel would deliver to the governor the answer exactly as Adams would give it to him. Adams' answer? Then you may tell Governor Gage that I trust I have long since made my peace with the King of Kings. No personal consideration shall induce me to abandon the righteous cause of my country. And tell Governor Gage it is the advice of Adams to him, no longer to insult the feelings of an exasperated people. That's kind of like it is today, isn't it? Comment as to the character of this man seems unnecessary. It must be obvious to all who read this astounding message that its sender possessed loyalty of the highest order. This is important. Racketeers and dishonest politicians have prostituted the honor for which such men as Adams died. When Governor Gage received Adams' caustic reply, he flew into rage and ensued a proclamation which read, I do hereby, in His Majesty's name, offer and promise his most gracious pardon to all persons who shall forthwith lay down their arms and return to the duties of peaceable subjects, accepting only from the benefit of such pardon. Samuel Adams and John Hancock, whose offerances are too flitigious and nature to admit of any other consideration but that of a severe punishment. As one might say in modern slang, Adams and Hancock were on the spot. The threat of the irate governor forced the two men to reach another decision equally as dangerous. They hurriedly called a secret meeting of their staunchest followers. Here the mastermind began to take on momentum. After the meeting had been called to order, Adams locked the door, placed the key in his pocket, and informed all present that it was imperative that a Congress of the colonists be organized, and that no man should leave the room until the decision for such a Congress had been reached. And the point about that is creating a mastermind group, creating a round table, creating a team of your closest players, your closest friends, the people you want to work with. Those are the people you want to put around you. Great excitement followed. Some weighed the possible consequences of such radicalism, old man fear. Some expressed grave doubt as to the wisdom of so definite a decision in defiance of the crown. Locked in that room were two men immune to fear, blind to the possibility of failure, Hancock and Adams. Through the influence of their minds, the others were induced to agree that through the Correspondence Committee, arrangements should be made for a meeting of the First Continental Congress to be held in Philadelphia, September 5, 1774. Remember that date. It is important than July 4, 1776. If there had been no decision to hold a Continental Congress, there could have been no signing of the Declaration of Independence. Before the first meeting of the new Congress, another leader in a different section of the country was deep in the throes of publishing a summary view, of the rights of British America. He was Thomas Jefferson of the province of Virginia, whose relationship to Lord Dunmore, representative of the crown in Virginia, was as strained as that of Hancock and Adams with their governor. Shortly after his famous summary of rights was published, Jefferson was informed that he was subject to prosecution for high treason against His Majesty's government. Inspired by the threat, one of Jefferson's colleagues, Patrick Henry, boldly spoke his mind, concluding his remarks with a sentence which shall remain forever classic. If this be treason, then make the most of it. It was such men as these who, without power, without authority, without military strength, without money, sat in solemn consideration of the destiny of the colonies, beginning at the opening of the First Continental Congress and continuing at intervals for 2 years until June 7, 1776. And it was Richard Henry Lee arose, he addressed the chair, and to the startled assembly made this motion. Gentlemen, I make the motion that these united colonies are, and to bright out to be free and independent states, that they be absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. So I'm going to end it there because it's 9:23 and this chapter goes on and on and on here. And again, I wasn't prepared for the reading today because today is Paul's day, but I don't know where Paul is. I just hope he's okay. But I just want to say, as far as this is concerned, Melvin, are you on the line? Okay. You may, see if you can press star 6 to get on the line, because I heard some background noise. I'm just wondering if you guys can get on the line with star 6.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Melvin, tell me, how does that story affect you? How can you relate to that story?
Well, I think what we're talking about here to a large degree is the mastermind principle, and to a large degree, that's exactly what we have going here. So I just want to say I'm proud of each and every person that's on this call, because by uniting and getting together on a good cause is where we can really accomplish some things. And so this is somewhat of a mastermind we have just getting on this call each and every single day. There's we can go on and on and on in terms of all the things that have been accomplished time and time again based on the mastermind, where it basically started with one person and grew from there.
Yeah, and I mean, don't you agree, Melvin, that in building our groups in networking and or direct sales, that don't you have several people or more than several people that is directly a part of your mastermind group or your roundtable or a part of your team?
Yes, you definitely have to have. And that's, I mean, whether if we're talking about Christ and or we're talking about Martin Luther King, you know, we can go on and on and on talking about any of the people that we kind of look at as we give a lot of praise or credit to. And in each case, in every case, it's a matter of them having a mastermind, and we're going to have one too. So if we find 1, 2, 3, 4, a handful of people that are on the same mission that we're on, and we gather and get together, it's there's going to be some great things that are going to come from that.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine last night across the line from me, and she's battling with getting her business going, and I suggested to her that she needs to take charge of her business and fill herself with self-confidence. And, you know, you can turn a switch on. Fake it till you make it, people. And I mean that in the kindest way. I don't mean to lie. I don't mean to be telling false truths or anything like that. But what I am saying is that you can turn on self-confidence, and you can raise your voice, and you can get excited about what you're doing and where you're going. We've talked in many weeks prior to now, we've talked about doing self-advertising. We've talked about writing down goals. We've talked about doing our positive affirmations morning and night, either recorded or read them out loud to yourself. What that does, that's called auto-suggestion, and what that does is that creates positive programming in your mind, because we're constantly bombarded with negative programming, so that helps reprogram our subconscious so that when we're dealing with certain situations, we're able to deal with them faster, quicker, deal with them more appropriately, and move forward. And we've also talked about I said goals, and then creating a bucket list, creating a white-hot burning desire. And most importantly, we've talked about making the decision to create a definite chief aim. And definite chief aim, I mean, Paul likes to make his defining purpose the amount of money. I've talked to some people that want to make it something different. For me right now, in the situation I'm in, it's creating a certain amount of money each month. So that becomes a part of me, and I am thinking that number, and I'm thinking that amount, because you can't count anything else. You can't count emotions. You can't count, you know, I guess you can count how many cars you have or how many houses you live in, but to get all those things takes the greenback, unfortunately. And so in order to make that money, You have to think it, and this call is the Think and Grow Rich call. So if you don't have that in your affirmations day and night, and following that and using auto-suggestion to reprogram yourself, you're going to be constantly bombarded with the daily stuff. And you have to ask yourself, if I continue to do what I've always done, I'll continue to get what I've always got. It's not enough. And so you have to make changes. It doesn't mean you have to be overwhelmed and make huge changes right away. That's not what we're talking about here. But if you're in the direct sales business industry and you're looking to build a team, look to those people that you really want to work with and go to them and be honest with them and say, listen, you know, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I want a better life. I've had it with this life, you know. I don't want to live like this. I don't want to live hand to mouth anymore. I don't want to live paycheck to paycheck. I've had it. Enough. And make a decision. Use your anger. Use that anger and turn it into a positive and make that decision to change your life. And then go out there and talk to people and be honest with them. Say, listen, I have found an awesome vehicle, an incredible vehicle, to build a $5, $10, $15, $20,000 a month income, but I need people on my team, and I want you on my team. And be honest, you know, pick the people that you want surrounding yourself with. And remember, you want to surround yourself with positive, outgoing, personable, loving people. You say somebody's name out loud, John Williams, and you get negative vibes from that name. Draw a line through their name and disassociate with that person. But then you say, John Williams, and you get positive vibes from that name. Positive attracts positive, and you want to include positive people around you. And that's how you build tremendous empires, tremendous businesses. And Melvin knows that firsthand. Melvin, help yourself. Do you agree with some of the things I'm saying?
I totally agree with you, 100%. And, you know, there's some, you know, as we started listening to a lot of these things and a lot of them that you just said this morning, there's even another one. I think everybody's heard it. It's called If It Is To Be, It Is Up To Me. And if we start implementing that, if it is to be, it's up to me, and realize that I'm the one who needs to take the lead. I'm the one who needs to start standing up and being and to be counted. And then and you start partnering yourself with others that wish to do the same. You know, people are getting a chance to learn all the right principles on these calls every morning. And one of the things Lincoln said is if you want to win somebody over to your cause, the first thing you want to do is make a friend of them. And a great way to make a friend of people is I want everybody to make sure that when you're talking to someone, you're talking to them about what's in it for them, not for you, but for them. So it's how can you partner up with them to help them achieve their goals? One of the things you just mentioned, and you mentioned it about Paul, and it's true with me, is every one of our goals tend to boil down to money. And when I say money, I'm saying many things. I'm talking about freedom. I'm talking about being with your family. I'm talking about a new home, a new car. I'm talking about the causes we care for, the people we wish to help. All of it comes back down to money. And so I have to make myself a value. I've got to become a value. And the more value I become, the more money I receive, and the more I can contribute to all these things and make a great life for myself and for others. So you're just right on track on all the things you're saying there.
I appreciate you, Melvin, though, because you know, I know a little bit more about you without knowing you personally from Paul, and you've had tremendous success, probably more than anybody on this call. And so I look to you for your expertise, certainly in this day and age, from what I've heard. Not, I haven't heard details, but I've heard that you've built huge organizations and been very successful. So I really appreciate what you say, and I really appreciate the compliment as well. Folks, I'm not going to open up the call because last time when I did it, I got a loud piercing noise. I will be checking on Paul here right away after this call, make sure he's okay.
I'm here, man. You guys are doing a great job.
Oh, great. Thank God. Wanted to make sure you were okay. Well, welcome to the call, my anchor, my co-anchor.
I'm so sorry. I have to apologize, but you know what? I don't, because you guys did a fabulous job. bottom line, I use my phone. It's happened to me once before. I use my phone as my alarm, and I had my alarm set, but my ringer, my volume was turned all the way down. So that, and in combination with overcoming this little sickness that I have, I slept in. My wife says, "Paul, it's 20 after 7. I was like, "Oh man." So I thought about going back to sleep, and I thought, no, I'll go hop on and see what these guys are doing there. So, man, you guys did a great job. Fabulous. I sure appreciate both you and Melvin. Just tremendous. You guys are just tremendous leaders. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Paul, and thanks for joining the call. We wanted to make sure you were okay. I was going to call and then update everybody on We Are Think and Grow Rich. And just so everybody knows, because I know there are new people joining the call today, that we have a Facebook page called We Are Think and Grow Rich, and on Facebook. And please feel free to go to that page. There are all kinds of downloads there from Mr. Paul Hutchings, who fortunately is on our call now and alive and well, alive, awake, and aware and enthusiastic. And he's here, and he's posted bunches and bunches of good stuff on that page. Go join that page and check out the downloads and check out all the great things people are writing about. And since I'm not going to open up the call, I will leave everybody with this, because it's 9:35 and we have a day of greatness to go ahead with here. I've said this before, but it's so powerful, so powerful. You are the designer of your destiny. You are the author of your own life. You write your story, friend that I spoke to last night. You write your own story. Every day you have a blank page to fill in. The pen is now in your hand, and the outcome is whatever you choose. So who will you be today? Where will you go? Who will you meet? And what great things will you accomplish? Dare to dream. Have a super day, everybody. Paul, I don't know if you want to say anything else. Melvin, thank you so much for getting on this call and helping me out with the call. Your insight and your thoughtfulness and understandable and obvious from your tremendous successes. Your support and your insight into building a business is huge and was a tremendous help to me today, and I thank you so much for being on the call. And I give it back to Paul. Any last words, my friend?
No, not at all. You said it. You guys did a tremendous job, and if it is to be, it's up to us. I mean, that's the greatest truth that we can all realize, as Melvin pointed out, and let's get out and make it so.
All right. Well, everybody have a super day then.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Take care.
Yep. Bye.
Thank you.